This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Sports royalty is on the air. This is the only show with so much talent and expert analysis, it can barely be contained. Jump on now or it'll pass you by. This is Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution.
Place to Be Nation, happy times for the powerhouse. Welcome to episode 7 of your home for everything. Everything under the sun, sports. Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution. I'm your co-host, Scott Priscolo. Great show tonight. Postseason baseball, crackling in the air. We will have a game 6 in one series, and we probably won't even have a game 5 in the other, but I have fingers and toes crossed on that. We got week 7 in the NFL. We got some great matchups. We got a huge matchup at Gillette to talk about. We also have a big matchup at the Meadowlands to talk about as well. And a little college football and anything else that strikes our fancy. Big firing in the NHL today, actually, too. So let's dive in. Let's bring in the guys. First off, of course, my favorite boxing and UFC resource, the great Cowboy Roger Morissette.
It's happening, Scott, and it's funny you say that because I have to apologize to the listeners because last week you caught me off guard. You asked me if there were any fights, and I said no, but GGG, Gennady Golovkin, fought in his first pay-per-view event on Saturday. I watched. He battered David Lemieux around the ring, won, endeared himself to the fans. He sold out Madison Square Garden, which is pretty good. And on the undercard, the new number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, now that Mr. Mayweather is retired, Ramon Chocolatito Gonzalez, defeated Brian Valoria. So there were fights, and if we were going to preview them, I would have said that the two heavy favorites would win, and that's exactly what happened.
Right.
So
yeah.
we'll just chalk that up as two correct predictions for the Cowboy.
You were too geeked up about what happened Sunday night. So, and speaking of geeked up on Sunday night, this guy was... and that is Cowboy Senior.
What's happening, Scott?
You're geeked up. They didn't win 70. Yeah. They didn't win 73-0. They did win though.
No. Pretty. You know, I'm a little better now. If you would have talked to me Monday, I was a little down. I was kind of disappointed in how our guys played. They didn't play a good game. Mm. And you know it's hard for me to do this, but I'll give the Colts a little credit. They played better than I thought they would, even though they did show us the stupidest play in the history of football.
I don't even know what that was.
But all in all, you know, I really don't think they're a good team. And I think the Pats really did play a bad game. They kind of – I don't know if they were too hyped up with, you know, wanting to destroy this team. But the offense especially was very disappointing in the second half. They were just kind of like flat. But you know what? You're going to have games like that in a year. It's too bad it was this one. But, you know, if you get away with a win, that's a good thing. You know, they had a subpar performance and still walked away with a fairly comfortable victory. So I have no complaints about that. And this week they're playing a much better football team than they did last week. So they better be ready. They better show up to play Sunday.
Yes, we will talk in segment 2. We will talk about this week's week 7. We got starting with two teams struggling. That'll be playing tomorrow night out at Levi Stadium. None of my gut check predictions came true. I was a little sad. I was bummed.
You were close on one.
Bills only lost by 13, but and Cleveland, hey, they went to overtime.
The game wasn't that close.
No, I know.
The Cleveland should have won. Hey, but real quick, I told you guys, how much money do you think Vegas made on Andrew Luck to Griff Whalen with a minute left?
I know.
Oh, God.
Seriously.
We're building a new casino as we speak.
Seriously. Well, how much of that? I mean, the line moved. I'll introduce him. Keith Schmidt's in the house again.
Hey.
What's up, fellas?
And how's it going, Keith?
Excellent.
But yeah, so we had talked about that. I said, you know, the line's only 7.5, and it bumped up to 10, which showed that all the money was on the Patriots. And that, what a what a kick in the ass that touchdown was for people. And then Gronk almost broke the kick. He stepped out of bounds by like half a foot. He almost took the onside kick to the house. But you don't screw with Vegas, Senior. I told you.
There you go.
So we will talk week 7 in the National Football League in a little bit in segment 2. As mentioned, we'll start with two battered teams. Well, one team may be looking for something to save their bruised pride. The defending NFC champions have a pretty big game on Thursday night in San Francisco. We'll talk about that. But first, let's talk about this Major League postseason. And we'll start first, because obviously everyone expects what I really want to talk about. But since that's going on at the moment, we'll talk about the American League Championship Series, which will go to a Game 6 on Friday night at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. The Royals lead the Blue Jays 3-2. Blue Jays safe face today with a 7-1 win in Game 5 in what could be the final game of the season at the Rogers Center. Schmitty, let's talk about this series for a few minutes. The pitching has been in this series. Really, neither starting rotation has been stellar. We've had some gems. Volquez in Game 1 was fantastic. Another, you know, Johnny Cueto contract start went right up in smoke. talk about the pitching between the two teams in this series so far.
Well, like you said, Volquez, he actually pitched well today as well. But the other two, Ventura and Cueto, not so much. But their bullpen is just lights out. I mean, if you look at all the box scores from these games, you'll see zeros, a one, a two, not many crooked numbers through the first six innings. And then 7, 8, 9, there's no runs for the Blue Jays, and it's all Kansas City. And that's a testament to the Blue Jays' bullpen not being as strong and how good KC's bullpen is. David Price, I felt bad for him. He pitched a great game through six innings. And then that seventh inning, the wheels fell right off. He gave up, what, 5 runs or something. We've got some interesting pitching matchups for game 6 and 7. If it goes 7, Price, I believe, will start game 6. And he should be opposing Ventura.
Yep.
And then 7 would be Cueto Stroman.
Which is huge.
It is. It's very big. Price and Cueto stand to make or break, you know, that those big contracts coming up. I mean, they're both going to get paid, but throwing a gem in a clutch situation like that would definitely help their paydays. I think Toronto's only hope is to get on the starters, because once the bullpens come in, it's over. KC will take it.
The Blue Jay lineup hits. I mean, there's no doubt about that. They scored 11 runs in Game 3 to take a 2-1 lead in the series, and then, you know, 7 today. But for the most part, in terms of the big at-bats, the Blue Jays seem to be flat. I mean, Game 2, Volquez pitched awesome in Game 1. Game 2, I mean, they had a 3-0 lead till the 7th inning. And that is what you have to do against this Royals team, like you said, Schmitty. I mean, you've got to get a big lead, and you've got to make the bullpen just inning fillers. Because if the game's tied or you're down, you're done. And that seems what it's been in this series in terms of the Blue Jays in position. They battered around Johnny Cueto in Game 3.
Yep.
If it gets to Saturday, Game 7, you know, Johnny Cueto better understand this is it for him. I mean, this is it. He wants a contract. He wants something. You got to win this game. Now we're looking ahead.
I don't think Johnny Cueto, to use Senior's favorite words, it has the intestinal fortitude to stand up on that mound and throw a great game with pressure like that. I always go back to that wild card game in Pittsburgh when he was in Cincinnati. And, you know, he's dropping the ball on the mound. The crowd got to him. I don't think he has what it takes. I really don't. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good pitcher, but you know, he's thrown one good game in this postseason. Mm. Just one. And he's had, what, three starts?
Yeah.
He was bad his first start. He was great his second start. It was pretty good. And then that last start was awful. God awful. But John Gibbons, he needs to leave LaTroy Hawkins in the bullpen. Leave him sitting out there. Don't bring him in ever again. He's blown two of these games. The David Price game, I believe he came in late.
Mm-hmm.
He gave it up. And then which other game did he come into? Was it yesterday? He came in. It wasn't, I mean, it ended up 14-2, but it wasn't that bad.
Right.
That was yesterday.
It was like 5-2 or something. They brought Hawkins
yesterday.
In. He loaded the bases, and then they pulled him, and that was it. Game was over. I don't know.
The Price game kind of told me something about what Gibbons feels about his bullpen. I mean, here I'm saying, you know, Price has finally thrown a good game in the postseason, and hey, it's a big, big statement for him. And you could see in that seventh inning he was toast, but he just wouldn't come and get him. I'm sitting there saying, you know, you got to get the guy out of there. He's done a good job. Get him out.
And you know what?
He just has no faith in the bullpen at all. You know, I mean, he just let him get pounded in the seventh inning.
Yeah. Well, he had a real low pitch count.
Yeah.
I think that might have been what he was looking at. I don't even think he was at 80 pitches yet in that seventh.
Yeah, but you got to look at what's happening to him out there.
True.
On the mound.
Oh, I know. And KC,
this is the playoffs, right? This is the playoffs. I mean, right. You manage a little different in the playoffs, I would think. I would think in a regular season game that would be fine, but. This is the postseason. The guy's losing it out there. You got to go get him. But I guess if you have absolutely zero faith in anyone that you can bring in, changes the whole.
Sanchez and Ozuna is the only two reliable arms he has out there.
And he saves Ozuna.
And they're kids. I mean, Ozuna's only what, like
20?
21? Yeah, I mean, well, we could talk about kids in the postseason. I got them littered all over the place.
My here's an interesting take on that series that I have. All we heard, and you know, part of this might be me who before the postseason, I picked Kansas City to go all the way because I really liked their team. But all the talk was about the Blue Jays lineup, and this was the greatest lineup you were ever going to see. And the Royals lineup kind of didn't get much attention. But that, when you look at it, the depth of that lineup, I mean, they basically out hit the Jays in this series. The depth of that lineup is unbelievable. I start looking at it top to bottom, and you go down to 8 and 9, and you see Alex Gordon and Alex Rios. There's just no breaks in that lineup. They got a really, really tough lineup. I mean, I don't see them losing two games in a row in Kansas City. And if I'm right about that, seeing that lineup go against this red-hot Mets pitching staff is going to be great. I mean, actually, seeing either of these lineups go against this Mets pitching staff is going to be a fun thing to watch. But I think the Royals lineup doesn't quite get enough credit. They're really tough. A pitcher they just don't give you a break. They all get their bat on the ball. Kane has been unbelievable. Morales, like I said, gives them something they didn't have last year, that pop. And the other trade deadline guy, Ben Zobrist. We talked about Cueto at the trade deadline, but Ben Zobrist is just a real nice piece to have. He's just a solid guy in that lineup and in the field. They're just a good quality team, and the lineup does not get enough credit. You're a starting pitcher looking at that lineup, and you're saying, man, when do I get a chance to breathe? You don't.
You don't.
You guys feel like Price has a lot on the line?
Yes.
0-7, right? In 7 career postseason starts.
I think him and Cueto have a lot on the line for different reasons.
I mean, I think particularly Price. I mean, if he goes out and just gets lit again, I mean – that has to hurt his bottom line, right? I mean, it has to. And Senior and I were talking about this offline. And I mean, this guy's a great pitcher, but we talk about Kershaw having troubles in the postseason. I mean, Price has been a dog. I mean, he has been a dog in the postseason.
7 starts, 7 losses. And, you know, you're a team that's going to spend this $210 million to sign David Price. You got to be thinking, it's not just for the regular season. If you're a team that's willing to step out and spend that kind of money on a starting pitcher, then you're a team that's saying, we expect to be there. We expect to be in the postseason. Or we wouldn't be a team that's a player on a guy that's going to take that big of a price tag. So to me, you got to take a step back and say, if he gets lit up again tomorrow, I don't know if I want this guy. And that's what the price is going to be. And I know it only takes one team to want them, but like as a Sox fan, do we really want them to go out there and spend that kind of money on this guy if he gets lit up again?
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
I mean, yeah, it's great for the regular season, but the reason why we want to do it is we expect to be there. And he fails every time he gets there.
That's a bad example. That's a bad example because of how bad the Sox pitching staff is. But the and I mean, Estrada got it done today. I mean, if you're looking, you know, I thought the Royals were going to close him out this afternoon.
And yeah,
now you get to Price, and on paper, it's a game. It's a matchup the Blue Jays probably should win if the real David or whatever, if the top five ace David Price shows up, it's a matchup they should win. And then who knows in a game seven? You know, Stroman's been good. And to your point, Keith, Cueto's been like Price 2.0 a little bit. Yeah. And so this one's up in the air for me. But it's really interesting to see how he goes out and performs. Because very, very high pressure in that start for him.
He hasn't responded to high pressure well before.
Mm. So,
and it's in Kansas City. I mean, I like the Royals in that game.
Unless Price can throw seven solid, I think they lose because I don't see them going nuts against Ventura. He's been sort of up and down, but. I can see him giving them six innings with three or four runs.
That's all he has to do. I mean,
right.
Look at Chris Young yesterday, right? What did he pitch, 4 1/3 innings?
Yep.
And that was enough. That bullpen is so good. Imagine if they still had Holland.
Yeah, I know.
That bullpen is fabulous.
Yeah.
So they have to build a big lead, basically. You know, maybe 4-0 going into the seventh, eighth. That might be safe. But if he throws another six-inning game, who's pitching that seventh inning? That's all I want to know.
Really?
Pennington.
Yeah.
he was as good as any of them last night.
Chad?
Better than Hawkins, that's for sure.
And more of a power arm. He was hitting higher on the gun than the previous two relievers that pitched before him. He hit 91. They had guys in there that were hitting 86, 87. You do need power arms in your bullpen.
One big injury that kind of went overlooked was Brett Cecil. In that last game against Texas, he blew out his calf on that rundown play with Beltre. Because he was actually the seventh inning pitcher.
That's a great point, Keith. It's a bullpen that couldn't afford to lose anyone.
Exactly. Yep.
Now, on the other side of the coin, we have seen the oldest adage. I mean, what are the four oldest adages in all of professional sports? In the NBA,
the Cubs will never win the World Series.
Well, that's possible. But in the NBA, centers and point guards win NBA titles. Goaltending wins Stanley Cups. Defense wins Super Bowls. And pitching wins World Series. And this Cubs lineup, which is very good, very young, but very good, and they mashed a Cardinal pitching staff that won 100 games. And all of a sudden, they walk into this, and it has been, I don't want to say ugly, because they've had a moment or two, but I have never seen a pitching staff this young know how to fix things. And the biggest example is Jacob DeGrom, who may have elevated past Matt Harvey as the ace of this staff for the one simple reason is that he makes a mistake, and he made two in game three, gave up a solo homer to linebacker Schwarber there on a fastball outside the strike zone. And then he threw the same fastball to Soler a few innings later, and he hit it out. And a kid at 20, I think he's 26, maybe he's 25, then retired the next 11 in a row. Nobody that young should be that smart. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's mind-boggling. Not just how talented these three guys are. And Matt's right now, through three, has given up a walk through three innings.
It's four guys. That's right. Don't discount Mats. That's
well, the only reason, I agree with you. The only reason I don't count Mats is he came in late, and I think he needs another spring training to season. But once he's seasoned, he's going to be a beast. But specifically Harvey, Syndergaard, and DeGrom, because you're talking about three guys. Harvey obviously is the oldest. He's, you know, the most experienced. He's also the biggest head case. Syndergaard is like a cyborg. Like, I look in his eyes, and I don't know what's back there. But he throws 100 miles an hour, and he's got a hell of a slider, and he's got that Doc Gooden-type curveball. Maybe not as high as the Lord Charles, but you can throw an 89-mile-an-hour curveball when every pitch before that was 100. So, I mean, guys, I'll ask any of you, has any pitching staff this young been this smart?
Or this good.
Or this good.
You think back to the Braves, right, with Avery and Glavin and Smoltz when they were kids.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty close. And those guys didn't have these arms.
No, I mean, these guys are all hitting 97, 98. And here's another thing to think about. I know you don't want to look past this year because you're on a great run, but you go to next year and you've got the three righties, you've got Mats, and you're going to have Wheeler back.
Yep, he's back probably after the All-Star break.
And he's another guy that throws 97, 98. I mean, wow, that's going to be a five-person rotation of youth that the league has never, that baseball has never seen, really. That's just so impressive.
I think it makes Harvey pretty expendable.
With all the chaos that went on.
Yeah, Will Gore. I still think
he's getting traded.
Scott Boras, obviously.
He's so talented, though.
Scott Boras obviously does not want him to be a Met. To stay. First of all, Scott Boras has not forgiven the Mets for blowing off A-Rod 15 years ago, which rightfully so we did. And I said that. I met Steve Phillips once, and I was pissed at Steve Phillips for a few years until I realized what kind of a lunatic A-Rod was. And I met Steve Phillips in our building because we do, you know, my facility, we do headshot interviews for ESPN and stuff like that. It's one of our things. And I saw him in the hallway and I said, Steve, you know, I introduced myself. I said, big Met fan. I said, maybe other people gave you crap. I was happy when you didn't sign A-Rod. I'll never forget him sitting behind home plate in game five in 2000 in the World Series against the Yankees. And it was almost preordained that he was going to be a Met. And then you hear rumors about, you know, he wants his own department, and there's going to be a separate office for just his people, and all this other jazz came out, and eventually he ended up signing. And then Tom Hicks, that dope down in Texas, signed him for, you know, $5 billion for whatever long it was. And I don't think Scott Boras has totally forgiven the Mets for that yet. So I think he realizes Matt Harvey is a chip, and then he did this whole insurance policy thing yesterday on Harvey's arm, which according to Dr. Andrews, from what I've heard, his arm is fine. So, I mean, I'll worry about that. As a Met fan, I'll worry about that in a month. But, yeah, if Harvey's expendable, I mean, you could dangle him in front of anybody, and get
massive
something.
Talent.
And get something.
Zito, Mulder, and Hudson. That's a good comparison.
That's a great trio. Fantastic. Yeah, yes.
And these guys are going to be five. They're going to be five kids of them next year. They're going to be five kids next year, I mean.
And you know what's really funny is if you remember on the preview shows, all we could talk about was how great the national staff was.
Yeah, and this doesn't even hold a candle to this.
Not even close. And I mean, I think the way these guys are pitching and the way Murphy's like this folk hero. I mean, it's really, really setting up well for the Mets with I think both Toronto. Either Toronto or Kansas City are both really good matchups for them because their pitching isn't that good. The Mets are hitting. I mean, I would make the Mets pretty much prohibitive favorites against either one of them the way that these guys are throwing right now.
I'll tell you this. If we want to look ahead, it is 6-0 in the top of the fourth. I'll say this. The Mets have faced two different types of lineups so far. The Dodgers were, except for Adrian Gonzalez, they weren't really that talented. I mean, the lineup was okay. It wasn't great. I mean, they had injuries. Gonzalez is a great hitter. Turner was hot. Seager's a kid. you know, Ethier's he. And then the rest of the lineup really wasn't that. Carl Crawford's 300 years old and he's leading off. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's a bad lineup.
It's a bad lineup. The Cubbies.
Jacob Turner was their best hitter.
Yeah, and he's having surgery. The Cubs, young beasts. Beasts. But they're kids. They strike out 25% of the time. They're softball swing hitters. They need time to learn to hit. These guys just mashed so far, and good pitching will beat mashers. I kind of think the Blue Jays are similar to that.
The Blue Jays are the Cubs with experience.
Yeah. The Royals lineup scares the crap out of me because they are so –
they'll test you.
They're cerebral. They're thinkers. Escobar, Hosmer, all these guys. They're like your guys' team in the early 2000s, you and the Yankees. 4-2 games that were 4 hours long that would drive us other major league fans up a wall. But
back after another.
But your lineups were like that. Those 2000 to 2000, you know, 6 – seven Yankees and Red Sox lineups mangled starting pitch counts. And this Royals lineup does that. And since everybody's petrified of pitch counts, I'm a little concerned that, you know, Matt Harvey, who, and these guys are good pitchers, but you know, we've had a lot of 3-2 counts in this series. You know, I could easily see the Royals lineup, even if the Mets are winning 2-0, I could easily see Harvey with 65 pitches through 4 innings. You know, and that kind of stuff would concern me. Now, Terry Collins is a little more confident in his bullpen right now than he was earlier in the series. For the first time in Game 2, we finally had you know, what we needed. Reed 7, Clippard 8, Familia 9. I'd like to think tonight we won't need that. Would be nice to give them a night off, but Lorelei knows they're still, you know, still. I'm one of those petrified guys. There's still 5.5 innings left,
and the wind's blowing out.
So. Yeah, you never know. And Matt, you know, but in any event, if you're Terry Collins and if you win this game, or if you win this series, they don't have to win it tonight. It'd be nice if they did, but I would almost want to play the Blue Jays because they're one of those lineups that have that cockiness that they think they could hit every single thing thrown at them, and those are the kind of guys you love to strike out. The Royals don't think that way. They go up there thinking, I'm going to milk this guy for as much as I possibly can, like Poppy used to do, like Manny used to do, like the old, you know, Damon and A-Rod, Jeter, all those guys did in the early 2000s. Milk counts, milk counts, milk counts. Royals do that. And for these starting pitchers who throw 100 miles an hour, you know, a lot of foul balls, a lot of foul balls, a lot of foul balls, pitch counts rise. So that's the interesting thing. Another interesting point I want to bring up, and I'm curious your guys' opinion, having 3 world champions in the last 11 years. I never paid attention as much because, again, you know, I haven't experienced this a lot. Even though we're in the middle of an epic postseason run, all I get is blasts from websites and, you know, from newspaper sites and stuff about, well, might as well enjoy Murphy now because he ain't coming back. And, oh, Cespedes, nice. You know, be nice wearing, fluorescent colors with the Angels or whatever. And I think to myself, you know, what? Why? Is there anything else to talk about? We're on the most epic run. But I understand these guys need to make money and they need to, you know, they need to write stories. Did that ever bother you guys, like, during the Red Sox heyday run that, you know, the Globe or the Herald will, or even the Projo would talk about stuff like contracts and stuff in the middle of postseason runs? Does that ever bug you, or do you just slough it off? Maybe it's just me because I'm not experienced in this kind of thing.
Just kind of ignored it. Just kind of ignored it and enjoyed the run. You know, when you're on a run like that, just enjoy it, Scott. It's great stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? My response to any of them would be the same thing. As long as these pitchers come back, we're going to be just fine. So we're enjoying this run now. And
yeah,
if these guys go, they're all replaceable parts.
Yeah. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, nothing to worry about.
Exactly. Well, thank you. That makes me feel good, Senior. Thank you. I needed a wise sage.
I try to listen to the local sports media as little as humanly possible. It's just, I mean, they're everybody's looking for that can't grab you headline. Enjoy the run, Scott. You know, it doesn't happen too often. I mean, it's not like you guys are the Marlins.
That's true.
They certainly enjoyed it. Where you're guaranteed to be in the cellar next year, but and it's you know, it is what it is. It's the economics of the game. And, you know, I mean, Murphy's a good player and he's having a great postseason, but he's a replaceable guy at the end of the day, right? I mean, it's not...
So Cespedes.
Yeah, and so Cespedes, so...
Well, I'll say this about Murphy. I believe they're going to offer him the qualifying offer, which if they do that, the chances of him coming back is probably pretty good because now the team has to give up a draft pick to sign him.
Yeah, and $15.8 million.
I mean, I like you just said, he's a good player, but, you know, right. So, you know, and he might even accept that because I don't think he's going to get $16 million on the open market.
I mean, the reason he's not going to stay the reason he's not going to stay with the Mets is because, unfortunately, he's in a spot where he's a good second baseman. He's not great.
He's not good. That good defense.
Yeah, he's not going to play third base. He's not going to play third base because David Wright's Aaron Tully doesn't want to play anymore. And David Wright's defensive skills aren't eroding. I mean, can't catch up to a fastball like he used to, but that's fine. Still has a great eye at the plate, and he can still hit the ball. And he's not going to play first unless they trade Duda, and Duda might have saved himself from getting traded tonight. So there's just no room for him, you know? I mean, that's really what – the Mets really want Dilson Herrera to be their next second baseman. So, you know, Cespedes is a different case because – and it turns out apparently he has shoulder stiffness in his left shoulder. That's why Collins took him out with a big lead. So we'll see if that's the case or not. But Cespedes is a different case because he's just going to be really expensive. And let's be honest, his role was to get us here. He hasn't, other than the bombs he hit last Tuesday against the Dodgers, he really hasn't brought, you know, that much to the table. He's whiffs just as much as Duda has. He did a lot last night. He's got speed. I mean, the base running last night was the kicker in that game. But they've been winning even with him being mediocre, you know?
Yeah, well, I don't want to give Cespedes all the credit, but a lot of the pitches Murphy is seeing is because Cespedes is in the on deck.
That is true. That is very true. You were exactly right on that. So, let me go around the horn. Cowboy, both come back. One of them comes back. Neither of them come back.
Neither of them come back.
Okay. Senior?
Neither.
Schmitty?
I hate to say it, but I don't think neither one comes back. KC and the Mets.
Okay.
No, that's not what you
meant. No, I was asking.
He was asking about Murphy and Cespedes.
The Cubs aren't coming. I'm only kidding. I don't want to be a jerk.
I think Murphy might end up back. I think he'll sign that qualifying offer.
Okay. Cespedes is gone, right? I mean,
Cespedes is going to go to.
It's what he does. He bounces all over them.
Cespedes will go to Arizona. I always say this. This is just me. Anytime there's a free agent. Because the Yankees don't spend the money like they used to. You guys really aren't going to spend a lot of money right now, the Red Sox. So I always say, if a team's going to just spend a lot of money frivolously, it's going to be the Angels.
The Dodgers are pretty good at that, too.
Yeah, but the Dodgers have a lot of money on the table. And let's talk a little off-season stuff while these games are going on. Greinke opted he opted out of the last – he left 3 years and $71 million on the table. I think he wants to stay a Dodger, but he wants twice that. I think he may stay, but Zach Greinke's a guy that will command a lot of suitors, including the Red Sox. But I don't know. Do you guys think the Red Sox would pay for him?
He's the best pitcher on the open market if he doesn't re-sign with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Better than Price. He's better than Cueto. And he's proven he can do it in the postseason. So.
Yep.
I would give him whatever he wanted.
Yep, exactly.
Would you be a little concerned about the Boston market with him, with all of his personality issues and stuff?
I mean, senior, you know, we don't want Price because of the postseason. We don't want – I mean –
I'm just throwing that out there.
There's only so many stud pitchers. I would be willing to risk it.
He is a bit of a head case, and he has problems, right? It was like a social kind of thing that he had where he didn't like being around people. I mean, the Boston media and stuff. I don't know if it would work out. this is what you talk to me as a Red Sox fan. What I would rather see him do, I look at him, I look at Cueto, I look at Price and the money that all these guys would want and what I think of these guys. You know, we got a loaded farm system. We got chips. I would much rather see the Sox trade for Sonny Gray. And you know that that could be done. You know
Sonny
that
Gray.
Because they know they're not going to be able to pay him. He would be my first choice.
I like Sonny Gray. That's a good pitcher, senior.
How about Matt?
Honestly, before we sign any of those free agents, that would be a nice target to me. And the Sox have the goods to do it.
Yep.
So
I agree with you, Roger.
My opinion.
Sonny Gray is a great pitcher too.
If
they sign Greinke or Price and don't go after Sonny Gray, I'm going to be okay with that.
As opposed to
Porcello being the number one
or Miley. excuse me. You just mentioned something, Schmitty, amongst the chatter. If it turns out the Mets do not want Matt Harvey's headache or his asshole agent, Scott Boras is about as much of a scourge of the earth as the Cardinals are, or the Colts. Do the Red Sox kick the tires?
Yes.
They're probably
kicking the tires right now.
What are you going to give up? Ain't going to be cheap.
Well, that's the thing.
Do they let Murphy go? Do they let Murphy go and you give us Pedroia? That wouldn't happen.
I don't think that would be honest.
I'd give you Pedroia. I love Pedroia, but
I don't want Hanley Ramirez. I don't want that other fat bastard at third base. So those are your problems.
Those guys have no trade value.
The value is our youth.
Those guys are your problem.
Pedroia may have some value, but not enough to snag Matt Harvey.
No.
No chance.
No. I mean, if you're talking about the Sox, I mean, untouchable Bogarts.
I was just thinking that.
Untouchable, right? At least to me. And close to untouchable Betts. But you might need Betts to get Harvey.
Yeah. The Mets would have no problem taking Mookie Betts. Another Mookie on the team? Hell, I'd love another Mookie on a team. But
I'd hate to see that happen. I'd hate to see them.
Matt Harvey is not going to come cheap. The Mets, Sandy's no dope. And if he's got this many chips and he can survive, the only reason I think Harvey would at least start the season is because Zach Wheeler's not due back till the middle of July. If Zach Wheeler was healthy at the start of the season, Matt Harvey would be traded this offseason. But I think Harvey would be traded at midseason only because you don't want to leave a hole in the rotation. I don't think Colon comes back. Nice might be back. He's a Met lifer. I don't know whether other teams might show interest, but that's interesting. We often monitor that throughout the year, and when we have our man Joel Barnhart back on, we'll talk about that too.
I hate to give live updates during the show, but the Cubs have the bases loaded with nobody out. Stalin Castro's up.
With one out.
Oh, I'm a little behind.
Yeah, Stalin just hit a seed right at David Wright.
Squabber's coming up,
I think,
right?
Bam Bam's up now. Yep.
Yeah, but you see who's up in the bullpen? The fat man.
He's
Colon?
The kind of guy that would get the Cubs out because the Cubs are nine Pedro Serranos. They can't swing at anything slower than nine.
Oh, I don't know, Scott.
No.
Malone's the kind of guy that this six-run lead could go out the window pretty quick.
It depends. I'm not panicked. Don't get in my heads. You're just mad because I just wanted Mookie Betts, and now you're trying to get in my heads. But yeah, there's some interesting chips this offseason, and there's a lot of qualifying offers, and so it'll be an interesting offseason. But anyway, why don't we take a break as this game gets a little juicy? When we come back, we will talk the National Football League. We will talk Week 7 in the NFL, and we have a big game at Gillette. We got a must win for a team this Thursday night in San Francisco, and must wins for two teams at the Meadowlands. NFL talk coming up next on Place to Be Nations Sports Evolution.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscillo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brain Buster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back. It's episode number 7 of the Sports Evolution. Scott Criscillo, the Cowboy, Roger Mutzef, Cowboy Senior, Schmitty. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. We're continuing the excellent WWE Network adventure. What this is my PIC, Mr. Azaro, Chad Campbell, Jason Greenhouse, myself, Dan McGinn. We're going through everything on the WWE Network chronologically. And we're, you know, doing our little tidbits, some of our comments. And we just posted today the episode of World Class Championship Wrestling from December 10th, 1982. So check that out. Glenn Butler with his Wednesday walk around the web. The newest episode of the PTBN NBA Team Podcast, Adam Murray and Andrew Reich continuing their NBA preview. And we'll have an NBA preview here on the Sports Evolution. We'll get another Extra Point alum, our man Grant Hughes from Bleacher Report, will join us in a few weeks to to preview the NBA season, so look out for that. The Wrestling Culture Podcast talks about the 2015 Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. Our man Neil Trauma continuing his place-to-be guide to Walt Disney World as he compares Anaheim and Orlando. And the Kevin Kelly Show earlier in the week, episode 45, part two of Kevin's interview with Matt Stryker. So PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Guys, of course, as we know, holidays are around the corner. And, of course, we all shop on Amazon. But before you do that, go to PlacementNation.com. Go to the right of the screen. You'll see the Amazon link. Click on it. You'll go right to Amazon and buy stuff as you see fit. And a little piece of that comes back to us to help us run the site. So it's greatly appreciated. No price rates or nothing. Nothing changes. You're just going through PlacementNation to get to Amazon rather than going right to Amazon first. And, of course, also, you'll see on the right is the new ebook that we have. JR and I continuing our rewriting of our vintage vaults. So you can check out the first Vintage Vault Refresh ebook we have, going through the Federation era of pay-per-views from WrestleMania 1 to the 1992 Survivor Series. So check that out as well. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. The National Football League, week number 7. But before we do that, let's talk quickly about week 6. Because week 6 had some big games. We'll talk quickly about it. I know Senior, Schmitty, and the Cowboy want to talk about the game on Sunday evening. It was not the 1940 NFL Championship. It was not 73-0. But the New England Patriots remained undefeated with a 34-27 win over the Colts. Senior, a win's a win, but are you a little grumpy?
Yeah, I was disappointed with the way they played, definitely. I mean, the game meant a lot to us. I think it meant a lot to them, too, so that's partially what disturbs me, is that they kind of put a lot of pressure on themselves and didn't really rise to the occasion, especially offensively in the second half. You know, some of the things that happened in the first half, the fluky interception, okay, with Julian's finger dangling off to the side and everything else, we can live with that. It was 21-20 at halftime. I felt fine, but then the offense to have to punt 5 times in the second half and 7 possessions was very disappointing. But again, in a 16-game season, no team is going to play great every game. And if you played a poor game and you got away with a victory, that's how I'm looking at it now. For a couple of days, I felt real bad about it. Now I'm okay. Hey, it was a regular season game. Pats won. They're 5-0. That's all fine. My thoughts on the Colts, although they played better, I still don't think they're a good team. I still think they're loaded with holes. I still think they're going to come out of that ridiculous poor excuse for a division. And maybe they come into Foxborough for the playoffs, and that would be great. But my other take on the Colts, and I think the whole country is beginning to agree with something that I've been saying for a long time, that they let the wrong guy go. I mean, they let Bruce Arians go, and this guy is a buffoon that's coaching that team. You know, I mean, everything that we're hearing about that the play and all that, and the way he handled it after, and everything that he handles, I don't like the way he handles it. From the speech after the Tennessee game, I mean, they're not a well-coached team. They certainly you're gonna do something like that in a game of this importance. You're gonna pull something like that off. You kind of should make sure your players are prepared to execute the play somewhat. And obviously, there were some people not prepared there. Like, none of them were prepared. The guys that went running out and the swinging gate, the play wouldn't have worked even if it worked, because they were in illegal formation. They were just kind of hanging around like they were in a dope ring or something, instead of, you know, getting on the line of scrimmage like they should. And, you know, the center not knowing what was going on. I mean, it's what we're used to in New England. We could never imagine a Bill Belichick coach team being that unprepared. A team not being prepared and trying to pull something like that out of your hat. And you would think they would have went over it a million times, and it's just another example. I think they're a really poorly coached team. I don't think they're a good team, and I think he's a terrible coach. And I still think they're going to make the playoffs because the division's so bad, and that'll give us – if they come to New England, it'll be one more shot where – maybe the Pats will do it right next time and embarrass the living shit out of them in the playoffs and beat them by the 50 points like they should have. So that's my basic take. The Pats laid an egg and still won the game, and that's fine. I'm good with it.
Schmitty?
Uh, I kind of agree with a lot of what Roger said. I don't know if I was as upset about how close the game was. I mean, it was kind of sort of fluky. I think the Patriots pretty much dominated that game. They got the 7 points off that interception that, you know, I mean, it fell into his lap. I mean, right place, right time, I guess. But I don't know. Belichick was happy with just walking away with the win. You know, they started running the ball with, 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I do agree with everything Roger said about Chuck Pagano and the Colts. That I don't like the GM. Gregson's probably going to get fired. Pagano's going to get fired after they get waxed by the Patriots again in the playoffs. I'm wondering if Pagano lost the team after this, after the way he handled all the press conferences and whatnot. Because the punter kind of let the cat out of the bag on a radio show about how the center, during the game, he didn't even practice that play in practice. He was the backup. I guess the regular gunner was supposed to be the center, and he got hurt. So, you know, the guy, Whalen, was it Whalen? Was he the center?
Whalen was the center.
Yeah. So he hadn't even practiced that play. Yeah, he practiced it early once, but he didn't know the, you know, the situations where, okay, if they line up this way, we're going to snap it. All he knew is if this guy touches my ass, I'm snapping the ball. And that's exactly what happened. So that's what Pat McAfee said on the radio show. And then they asked Pagano about that today, and he kind of sidestepped the question. He avoided it. So I don't know how the players feel about that, because he kind of hung the guy out to dry. You know, I know he originally said, oh, it was my fault, you know, communication error, but he could have got into a little detail about it and got that guy off the hook because, you know, the whole city wants to kill him.
I mean, I think the good point about losing the locker room, Keith, and I think it's more the defense. I mean, the defense was playing good. I mean, they were only down 6 at that time, and the defense had stopped the Patriots a couple of times in a row. And how deflating is that for? And I don't mean to use that word. I'm not trying to be an asshole. That just, but really, how deflating is that for a defense against the best offense in football, arguably, where a team they've never been able to stop at all, and the offense, you know, the Pats defense came out in the second half and played a lot better, and the Colts couldn't get anything going, and the Colts defense kept them in that game.
Yep.
And then Pagano calls this fucking horrible, idiotic play, and now the Patriots have the ball at the 35-yard line. Yep. Down, and you're only down 6. You're down 6 at your own 35-yard line. That, I mean, I agree with a lot of the stuff Pagano did in that game. Kind of, he played it going for broke. When you're playing against a team that's better than you, that's how you can, you know, that's how you win the game, right? You have to, you know, I don't disagree with the onside kick, which I thought the Pats got a bit of a gift on that call.
Yeah.
But at your own 35-yard line, down 6, you're sort of, by even trying that play, you're sort of telling the team you don't believe in them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, and I don't think the Patriots played bad. I mean, it's in Indianapolis. Indianapolis, it's their Super Bowl, you know, and I know the Patriots, it's their Super Bowl too. And they, you know, the Pats came out and throw, which kind of played into Indianapolis's hands a little bit. And, you know, they got the pick 6. Once the Patriots decided to just give the ball to Blount, the game was over. Essentially, yep. Right? And they could have done that from the beginning, but Senior called that they were going to come out and throw so that Brady could make a statement. But once Edelman hurt his finger and started dropping every pass thrown to him, you know, now we give it to Blount, and Blount goes crazy. So overall, good win for the Patriots, and I think it's a good segue into a much tougher game this week for the Patriots against a team that I think matches up really well to them in the New York Jets.
Yes.
Can I just make one more statement about this game?
Sure.
Two more. I just want to make 2 quick points.
Okay.
Number one, about saying that the Pats didn't play bad. I specifically am talking about the offense in the second half, and I don't think you'll see them go this season a half where they punt 5 times in 7 possessions, and they're going to play some better defenses than the Indy defense. So that's disappointing. I don't care what you say. Number two, the thing of Pagano losing the locker room, what's even worse about the way he handled it is the way he said it after ultimately it's on me. He made it sound, and definitely purposely made it sound like it was kind of like the player's fault, but I'm taking the bullet. I'm trying to make himself look like the good guy. I'm going to be the player's coach and take the bullet for this guy, which led everyone who listened to that comment believe that the center fucked up, that it was the center. It was all the center's fault, and he was being the nice player's coach taking the bullet for him, when that was the furthest thing from the truth, when it was him that screwed up. So that could definitely cause him damage in the locker room, because the guys on the team all know that. And when the punter has to come out and stick up for a guy, a kicker, I mean, the way kickers are viewed in football, and he had the balls to step out there and stick up for the guy, you wonder about a fractured locker room. You wonder if there wasn't a leader on that team that could have kind of came out and stuck up for him, like maybe Andrew Luck or an experienced player from the defense or somebody. It had to be the punter. So I think that locker room's a mess. This team's a joke. We can move on now.
The Cowboys defense shut the Pats down for a half, pretty much, too, Senior.
Yeah, the first half, they had no answer for Hardy.
So
it's rush, yeah.
Well, this week, 1 o'clock, they take on a New York Jets team that this might actually be just as big a game for the Jets as it is for the Patriots. By the way, there are six going into week seven. There are six undefeated teams left. Half of them have the week off. The Bengals, the Broncos, and the Packers all are off this week, as well as the Bears, who are most certainly not undefeated. this is just as big a game for the Jets, if not more than the Pats. You look at the Jets so far this season. They played a stinker against the Eagles, and their other wins are against, not the greatest talent in the league. They beat the Browns. They beat, the Colts, which Senior has perfectly let us know how awful they are. They beat Miami, and they beat the Redskins. Not the greatest teams on the planet. So, big game for Todd Bowles. As big as it is for the Pats. So, this is an interesting matchup. Jets defense is very good. Let's break it down. Pats offense, Senior. What do you look for against this Jet defense?
I look for the Pats offense to click better than they did last week. I just don't think they're going to play two games like that in a row. I was kind of scared of this game, and as the week's going on, I'm starting to feel like it's one of those weeks where, especially if you listen to the local media and stuff, there's all kind of people in the local media saying this is the week the Jets are going to beat them. You look at the history, it's always close games, even when the Jets aren't good usually. But I just got a feeling that when you start hearing talk like that, the Pats really tend to rise to the occasion and play this game and win it a little more convincingly than everybody thinks. And I'm getting the feeling that that's going to happen in this one. It's home. They're coming off this game that was kind of a crazy game that they were getting up for all kind of different reasons. And now it's just, this is a divisional game, a huge game, important at home. And this is the kind of time where this team steps up. Kind of last year going into that Cincinnati game, everybody had bad feelings and we all know what happened there. This year going into the Buffalo game, there were a lot of people that were saying the Pats were going to lose that game and they kicked the crap out of them. I just got a feeling that the Pats offense steps up, plays a really good game, maybe even, and if they get ahead, maybe even throw a touchdown pass on Revis. That would be kind of neat. And he can give him up. I'm not saying we're going to go after him all day because that would be stupid.
Yeah, I would rather them not do that.
But when you get a lead, if they get a lead late in the game, I think Tom wouldn't mind sticking one in Revis's craw after the stuff he said. Like made an ass of himself during Deflategate saying, these Patriots, these guys, you hear the things. He should just take the suspension. Things happen. That's the way they do things over there. When you lame brain, you were there last year and you won with this team. What are you saying stuff like that for? You're almost discrediting yourself.
He was the over there.
So that would be a nice cherry on the sundae if they get a lead. But yeah. I really respect the Jets. I think they're a good team, but I think the Patriots are the best team in football, and they're at home, and they're better than the Jets. And they're going to win this game by about 10 points to two touchdowns, and people aren't seeing it that way. Everybody's seeing a 1 or 3 point game that maybe they pull out at the end, or this physical slugfest, which, you know, somewhat of it's going to be, but I think the offense is going to really determine, get it into gear and click against this team.
So what do you guys think the line is, if anyone hasn't seen it?
It's like 9.5.
10.
Yeah. Is that only because they're home?
It's because they're home. I mean,
home, and they're a better team.
And they're the Patriots. Mm. And I think, I mean, on it, I mean, I agree with Senior. So I disagree, Scott, a little bit that it's a huge, it's a big game for the Jets, but to me, it's a game they should not be expected to win, really. You know, I mean, it's a no, I mean, very rarely do teams come into New England and win. The Patriots are pretty clearly, I think, the best team in football. It would be a pretty big upset for the Jets to come in and get the win. I think the Jets can keep it close, but overall, I think the Patriots are just a better team. And I mean, it's Fitzpatrick versus Brady. It's Fitzpatrick versus Brady. I'll say it again. And I think, you know, you had asked what you think the Pats are going to do on offense, Scott. And I think you'll – so Revis, I would assume, is going to be matched up on Edelman, mm-hmm. which, I mean, I think Gronkowski – I think this is a big, big Gronkowski game that he's going to be the guy. And then a lot of Deion Lewis out of the backfield. I think Blount – this will be one of those games where Blount gets about 2 carries.
Yeah, I agree 100% on that.
I'll tell you, Danny Amendola is starting to really get a rapport going with Tom, too.
Well, LaFell may play, too. Yeah. He's their real number two. Amendola is a guy who could give Cromartie some trouble. Unless they put screen on him, they could do that. But I don't see the Jets having any answer for Gronkowski. And then on defense, the Pats defense, admittedly, is not the Jets defense. But if you look at Fitzpatrick's career, and I'm a noted, I don't really believe in Ryan Fitzpatrick. Schmitty will tell you that.
Yeah.
If you look at his career, he's gotten off to these hot starts before, and it's right around now where he turns into the pumpkin. And yeah. What I expect out of the Jets offense is I think they'll move the ball up and down the field. They have great skill position players. Ivory will definitely be able to get work done. I see Fitzpatrick turning it over at 2 or 3 of the most inopportune times possible. And I see a Pats win somewhere like a 31-17-ish type of win. And the Jets shouldn't hang their head. You know, they're going to... They're playing the best team in football on their home turf. It's like, you know, if it's like when a team, you know, the Giants go to Green Bay or something. You know, the Giants aren't a bad team, but, you know, they're probably going to get their ass kicked in Green Bay. That's just the way it is.
Big out.
The only thing that
I just want to do a quick update, Schmitty. Big out in at Wrigley. They took Mats out with 2 on and 2 out. Brought in Hunka Chunk, and he just struck out Chris Bryant to end the fifth inning.
You gotta love the fat man.
Unbelievable.
In his younger days, you know, he was a guy that people kind of hated, and now he's like this lovable guy. Everybody loves Bartolo Colon. I love watching him run the bases. It's everything he does.
He's like a mascot. He's like one of the sausages at a Brewers game.
if the sausage had a hypodermic needle sticking out of his ass.
Schmitty, you were going to say something. Sorry.
Yeah, the only thing that might scare me this week is the Jets' defensive line against the banged-up offensive line of the Patriots. That scares the hell out of me because these guys can put a serious pass rush on. And now, Solder, right, is the one that's out for the year. And then somebody went down last week.
Cannon.
Yeah, Marcus Cannon, who was the backup tackle. I don't know if he's going to play this week. He had a toe injury. So now you're talking about Cameron Fleming and Vollmer. If one of those two goes down, who the hell's going to play the tackle?
The way
the Pats offense works, I mean, I think in a game where they're going to be throwing it a lot, I don't think it matters that much, Keith, because he gets the ball out so quick that
they're going to have to keep themselves out of third and long.
Right, I agree
with
that.
That's the bottom line.
And I mean,
if they find themselves in third and long,
They use that short, that quick short passing game that's so effective.
The other thing that's, I mean, the thing that, that if there's a path to victory for the Jets, it's those two receivers matched up against the Patriots secondary. The Patriots secondary really isn't very good. I mean, they're not. And you could definitely see Decker and or Marshall getting loose for a few big plays. And, you know, that could do it. But
are you sour on Malcolm Butler?
I'm not sour on him. I mean, do I think he's a legitimate number one corner? No. I like Terrell Brown as a number two, but now he's done.
He's done, yeah.
And I mean, Luck was not himself in that game. He wasn't putting any heat on the ball. It was, you know, save sailing passes left and right. And he still threw for 330-something yards and three touchdowns with no picks. I mean, they pretty much moved the ball at will in the first half against the Pats. And these receivers are a bit of a different animal than the Colts.
Yeah, Marshall especially.
I mean, Marshall Butler's going to be matched up with Marshall, and Marshall should be able to eat him up. I mean, that's a plus matchup for the Jets.
I'm looking forward to watching that. This is a litmus test for Butler.
Yeah, I mean, he covered Antonio Brown in the first game, the whole game, and he did a pretty good job, but Brown still had 130 yards and a touchdown, you know?
Yeah, but Brown can do that to anybody.
Right. Marshall can probably do that to anybody, too, the way he's playing really, really well right now.
Yeah
but, you know, you talked about, okay, Luck not 100%. The job that Brown did, that was with Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, even Luck at not 100%. Is better than the guy that's going to be throwing Brandon Marshall the ball this week.
True.
You got to take that into consideration too. I mean, everybody's talking that, you know, hey, Ryan's playing really well. He's off to a good start. And we're all saying it too. Yeah. You know, you watch the games, he looks good, but then you look at you go dig a little into the numbers. It's 9 touchdowns and 7 picks. That's really not stellar. And no. It's like, oh, he's for Fitzpatrick. He's staying away from the interception. He's like due for a 4 or 5 pick game, you know, because he has those. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, they need to lean on. I mean,
I don't see it happening. And even last week, as much as you say they gave up all that yardage, they didn't give up a lot of points. I mean, 7 of the points the Colts scored were scored by the defense. So as much as Luck moved them up and down the field, isn't that typical Patriots? Giving up yardage but not giving up a lot of points. So, I really don't care. I know you're looking for a path to victory. I know, but I'll shoot it down.
If there's a path to victory. And I mean, this will be the best running game the Pats have faced. Ivory, I mean,
Chris Ivory's really good.
And I mean, Gore was able to do some work behind that god awful Colts offensive line. Yeah. So, you know, it's not out of the realm. And the Jets play him tough. It's not out of the realm of possibility. The Jets win the game. I just don't see it in Foxborough. If it was in New York, I would give them a real legitimate chance. But the Patriots are so tough in Foxborough.
Yeah.
I think it'll be low. I think it's low scoring, and I don't think the Pats cover. I think the Jets hang around. I'd say the Pats win by a touchdown, but I think they win. But I do think they win. Let's talk about a team that needs a win very badly, and that's Thursday night in San Francisco. Because if any team needs a wound licker, it's the Seahawks. After losing at home Sunday to the Panthers, they head into San Francisco. Must win. When they lose, they're 2-5.
Seahawks key, what they can do to win. They get the NFL to change the rules and you only play 3 quarters. they'd be dynamite.
Oh my God.
Them and the Giants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Scott pretty clearly it's a must win for Seattle. They got a little help with Arizona losing last week, but it's a must win for Seattle. And I mean, on paper, they match up really well to the 49ers. Colin Kaepernick, he's played a lot better the last couple games. He doesn't handle the rush real well, and Seattle should be able to put some heat on him. I think Wilson has a big day against the Niners secondary. I think you could see one of those games where Wilson runs for 100 yards and throws for a couple of 100 yards. I don't think it's a blowout, though. San Francisco's playing better, and Seattle, just something's not right there. There's just something not right there, but I think Seattle will get it done.
Mm.
What's with their secondary? You know, everybody was saying, oh, well, it's Cam Chancellor missing. And, well, Cam Chancellor's back, and they're still giving up big plays, and especially in crunch time.
Well, I
don't know. What the heck's wrong with that
team? The Olsen play was a miscommunication.
That's what we were saying. That's what was supposed to get cleared up when Chancellor came back, right?
Well,
but he was saying they look confused in the secondary all the time. It's not getting better.
I think it's a pretty easy answer, and I think it's Dan Quinn.
Yeah, there you go. He's doing a great job. That's a good point.
You know, I mean, he's a obviously quite pretty good coach.
Yeah.
And Carroll is right there with Pagano for me in that. I mean, really. I mean, Carroll's not. I mean, he's a rah-rah guy, but I mean, what is he really?
Yeah, he's not an X's and O guy.
No, and I mean, he's taken this. Like, I mean, you don't really talk about a coach not being clutch, but, I mean, he's taken what happened in the Super Bowl and just, like, doubled and tripled down on it by just blowing leads, blowing games in the fourth quarter left and right. And, yeah, if Dan Quinn was still there, this defense would be playing a lot better. But
if they lose this game,
they're a rudderless ship.
The sky will be falling over there. I mean, this would be great to see them lose this game.
Yeah, it would make my 49ers pick at the beginning of the season to come in second in that division.
Not as far-fetched.
To piggyback on that Dan Quinn, I mean, look what he did to Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, not to say Atlanta's a great defense all of a sudden, but they're at least stopping the run.
And that defense was beyond awful.
It was the worst, one of the worst defenses in the league last year.
For the last 2 years, yeah. So yeah.
And the personnel didn't change that much. So
that was a good point, Cowboy.
Thank you. I make one an episode.
I think Seattle wins this game easily. It's a Kaepernick 3-pick game.
Yeah, you always think
three
that.
Turnovers. I think so.
They are not playing good. I like Seattle too, but I think it comes down to the end.
Well, if it comes down to the end, they could be in trouble because the end isn't their good time.
No.
If it comes down to the end, they might be getting.
I see a double digit win.
That might be the
desperate.
They suck on the road too, Keith.
Yeah, I know.
I'm almost talking myself into the Niners here.
They're more talented than the Niners. I think the talent plays out in this one.
Unprecedented on Sunday, as we look at Sunday's games, the second of three at Wembley this year. First one, of course, was the Jets win over Miami. This one you can only watch streaming on Yahoo, no national TV, except, of course, in the two markets. You can watch it on Yahoo, 9:30 Sunday morning as the Bills take on the Jaguars, Buffalo coming off the loss to Cincinnati. I think they win here. Is it too early for Tractor Pull, Senior? I don't think there is Tractor Pull at 9:30 in the morning. Maybe church on TV? I don't know.
No, I don't think it's a Tractor Pull game either. It's an interesting game.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the Bills we think are better than what they've shown lately, but, you know, they've got some injuries. I still think they're a better team than what they've shown lately. And the Jaguars, even though they're not a good team, they're kind of a fun team to watch because they play some offense. You know, Bortles airs it out. He's liable to make mistakes, but he's going to make plays too. And they got some exciting talent in the receiving core and Robinson, and now with Julius Thomas back. You know, they're kind of a fun team to watch. So, no, I mean, we'll have Yahoo tuned in because it is kind of a fun game to watch. And I don't know what to expect from Buffalo right now, you know. So,
true.
Taylor might play.
That would make a big difference because Manuel's terrible.
Manuel's not very good. I mean, I think they can probably beat Jacksonville with Manuel. but, yeah, I mean, it's a bit tractor pulley for me. Jacksonville, to your point, I mean, their games are entertaining because their defense is freaking awful. And so it's, it ends up being instant offense for both teams. But Bortles has made some strides. He's a bit of a bonehead, but he's made some strides. But, yes, I mean, it does seem like the NFL tries to put, like, the worst possible games in London every year.
I know.
Yeah, don't they?
is it like if you finish in, like, the bottom five of the league the year before, your name goes into a hat, and then those teams just play each other in London?
It's got to be, though, because, I mean, why would you want to put a good matchup at 9:30 in the morning when most people probably, except for the junkies, like all of us, are actually watching, like... particularly West Coast. I mean, say it's like the Chargers. I mean, why would the? I mean, would the West Coast fans get up at 6:30 in the morning to? I mean, maybe.
Well, I'll tell you why they do it. It's because it gives you the same reason they do Thursday night and Monday night and Sunday night, because it gives you another exclusive time slot where you get the national audience.
Mm-hmm. True.
I mean, I love it. I love it because, yeah, I'm a junkie, and I love the idea that I can start watching live football at 9:30 in the morning and watch it until 11:30, 12 o'clock at night.
Yep, it's true.
To me, it's a great thing, and I'm not the only one that says that. They wouldn't do it if they wouldn't keep doing it if they weren't getting ratings.
But I do find it funny, though. I do find it funny, though, that you're right, though, Cowboy. When do we have, like, two powerhouse teams, you know,
well,
go to London?
I understand having the Jaguars there because they could be the London Jaguars at any second now. You know?
That's true.
But, so. Yeah. Well, the one thing, I mean, it's probably like Brady's just like, I'm not going there.
The Patriots the other thing did is, go a couple of years ago, didn't they? They played St. Louis out there, I believe.
Yeah. The other thing is, do you know, if you put two good teams out there, you're taking a home game away from one of them.
Right, right.
You know, if it's for a contender to go there and play a good game, now you've only got seven home games. It's kind of unfair.
Well, you only have seven road games, too, right?
No. If it's your home game, it's not your road game. Hello.
Yep, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So. See, that was a bad point by the Cowboy. That's what we're used to.
That even thinks up.
All right. This is a tractor pull game, possibly.
Pass.
The Bucks head to Washington to play the Redskins. This game may be blacked out because the Redskins. I mean, I don't know.
That's pure tractor pull.
Yeah.
Redskins.
What about this game? The Falcons head to Tennessee to take on the Titans. Is this a trap game for the Falcons? Should they be worried? Or is this a game after last Thursday's loss to the Saints? Should they go in and you know,
Atlanta rolls. Tennessee's a joke.
Okay.
Atlanta's a decent football team. Atlanta rolls over them, especially coming off a loss.
They go and they played on Thursday, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So they've also had 10 days to prepare.
No, they're 10 days to prepare
for the Titans.
You know, I think if Mettenberger plays, I think it actually works in the Titans' favor as far as moving the ball on Atlanta. I think he's as Keith said, they're good against the run, but you can throw on him as Breeze showed the other night. So I think Tennessee will score some points, but I do.
How many points will Atlanta score?
Atlanta might score 45 points. How good's Devontae Freeman, guys?
Unbelievable.
I mean, where did this kid? I mean, you could make a legitimate case that he is the best running back in football right now. And you watch him play. It's not just like a guy on, like, you know, because sometimes it's like a guy's in a great offense and he's getting stats that way. He is good. I mean, he is really, really good. He hits the hole hard. He's fast. He's got great hands. He's got a nose for the end zone. I mean, it's a, you know, he kind of reminds me of
a young Steven Jackson.
He's smaller than him, though. He reminds me of Falk. Honestly, it reminds me a lot of Marshall Faulk, like in his prime, just fast and man.
And on the same team, you have obviously you can make a case the best wide receiver in football. So they got some toys over there, and Matty Ice isn't bad. That's a really scary offense.
Mm. Freeman definitely benefits from that because every time Julio's on the field, you know there'll never be eight guys in the box. Because you have to dedicate two defenders for Julio. So.
Right, and Freeman's so good out of the backfield anyway.
Yeah.
And you really can't put eight guys in the box, you know? It's always fun having a guy come out of nowhere like that. I mean, you've watched him last year. He didn't look like anything. He averaged about 3 yards a carry.
Yeah, even week one. It looked like Tevin Coleman had that job secure. Mm. After week one, Freeman didn't do much in the first week. And then the second week, Coleman got hurt, and it was like, here comes Dickerson.
Unreal.
What the fuck happened?
I love Eric Dickerson.
I know I gave up on Freeman real early. Mistake.
All right, so we're all thinking a comfortable win for the Falcons on Sunday.
Oh yeah.
Double digits.
Seven. Falcons by seven.
Seven? Okay. let's talk about seniors' favorite team. And that is the Indianapolis Colts. They this week home to the Saints, looking at an uptick here, maybe a second straight win. I don't know. Do the Colts save face here? What do you think, Cowboy?
I mean, on paper, it looks like this is a game the Colts should win, but I really don't think Luck's right, and that defense sucks, and I think they're a team in disarray. Breeze is getting healthy. They played good against Atlanta the other night. The Saints are traditionally shitty on the road, which gives you a little bit of pause, but the stadium's kind of similar to where New Orleans plays. I'm going to go with the Saints in an upset.
Yeah, I'm going to surprise you and take Indy in a close game. I think it's going to be an offensive game. Luck should be a little healthier. You know, he's definitely got the better skill players to play with, to toy with, than Drew has over there. I think, and they're home. So, yeah, I say the Colts in a close, high-scoring game. I mean, it might be one of those back and forth, last team with the ball kind of games, and just on the basis of home field, I'm going to say Indy. I mean, both defenses are terrible.
Yeah, I agree with you guys.
35-31 or something.
Willie Snead has a huge game here. The Colts
there
can't cover. The Colts can't cover number two receivers. They throw Donvante Davis on Cooks. Snead eats up whoever the hell they have on him. Look at the game Amendola had.
I'm not saying the Saints aren't going to score a lot of points. I'm just saying the Colts will score a little more. That's all.
This is the game I'll probably be tuned into at 1:00 because it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. It's going to be like a game where the defense isn't even on the field.
I think Indy gets their first 100-yard rusher in a while. Frank Gore finally goes over 100 in this game.
I agree with Schmitty on that. I agree with that. This looks like a fun game. We were ripping these guys kind of half to shreds last. Well, some of us did. The Lions will host Minnesota at Ford Field. Lions ended up beating the Bears last week in overtime. Minnesota with a win. This might be one of those kind of like Buffalo Jacksonville, kind of a fun, weird game to pay attention to. Two in a row at home for the Lions. What do you think, Schmitty?
Yeah, I think Detroit beats them. It'll be a close game though. It'll be like a field goal game. But I see a lot of offense in this game. I think Calvin keeps rolling off of last week, and Adrian Peterson has a makeup game for what he pulled last week. I see this one like 27-24, 31-27 type of game.
I like the Lions too, and I just think it's a bad matchup for the Vikings. The Lions, the way to beat the Lions is to throw on the Lions because they have a very, very porous secondary. Everybody throws all over them. And Bridgewater has not shown the ability to throw really this year. One touchdown in three of the games and none in the other two, I believe. And the Lions are okay against the run. And I think they're going to stack the box against Peterson and make Bridgewater try to beat them. And I just don't think he has it in him. I think Diggs will have a good game. I like that kid. I think he could be a he could be kind of a sleeper for Minnesota. But yeah, I think the Lions are the Lions will get it done here.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah, I'll go right along with that. I'll say Lions, maybe not as super high scoring, but Lions at home. Minnesota's not a good team. 24-17 Lions.
That's got tractor pull potential, that game.
It's not a game that you're really licking your chops to watch, that's for sure.
Minnesota's offense is just so bland. I mean, Bridgewater is he's very much an Alex Smithy kind of guy without the accuracy right now.
What incredible segue, Cowboy, because
I try.
You like that? Our next game, we'll head to Arrowhead. The Chiefs are an IR mess. Regardless of who starts for the Steelers, this should be a win for Pittsburgh, no?
I actually like the Chiefs, unless Roethlisberger starts. Arrowhead's a tough place to play. The Steelers' defense isn't very good. Landry Jones, I think, the Chiefs stop the run and you can throw on them. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Landry Jones looked good for one quarter or one half, but I don't think it was real. And I think the Chiefs will actually get their offense going in this game. You can run on the Steelers so that
two-headed monster, West, if you, I don't, maybe not a monster, but that two-headed impersonation of Jamal Charles, West and Davis will get some work done. I think Kelsey has a good game here. And I think the Chiefs defense doesn't completely stop Bell, but bottles him up enough. And I think the Chiefs get the win at home. I don't think the Steelers are very good without Roethlisberger. And I think they've gotten a little bit lucky in a couple of these games. So,
Okay.
Well, they were sort of impressive last week. Beating that was a good team they beat last week. Landry Jones, I mean, when he came in, the offense picked right up. Martavius Bryant woke up.
Do you think some of that was that? I mean, when you're in practice and you're playing Michael Vick, don't you? You kind of prepare a certain way, right, for the game.
True.
And I mean, that's, you know, the Cardinals, I think, just kind of get caught with their pants down. And I mean, Palmer threw for 421 yards, and they only scored 13 points.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a weird game, I think. That's just me. And, I mean, of course we can be wrong. And the Chiefs are not a very good team. But Pittsburgh without Roethlisberger, isn't a good team. And their defense really isn't very good. And it's just that Arrowhead, I still believe that that's still a difficult place to go into and win. And that's just me. Senior, looks like you're going to be the tiebreaker.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with Pittsburgh. Just on the basis of they seem to be finding ways to get it done. Somehow they're 2-1 without Big Ben. And I really don't think the Chiefs are any good. You know, at the beginning of the year, I was saying, okay, they're losing close games to decent teams. But they seem to be on a slide downhill. They seem to be getting worse every week. I think they're playing taps for Andy Reid. He's done.
I don't know about that. I mean,
losing
your starting tailback, you know, who's an all-pro.
Yeah, they weren't winning with them, though.
Well, that's true, too.
I don't know. They just look like a dead team to me. You know, kind of team that just doesn't do anything for you. And the Steelers are just, I don't know, just finding a way to win games. And I don't think, you know, we obviously Landry Jones is an unknown commodity. But he can't be worse than Vic was. So it can't hurt to have Jones playing. I mean, Vic was awful, and they were somehow hanging in games. So they have a lot of weapons on offense. Their defense isn't great. I agree with Cowboy there, but the Chiefs' offense just doesn't strike fear in your heart at all. Alex Smith sucks. You know, he sucks, and you don't have Jamal Charles anymore. I don't see them finding a way to win the game. I think Pittsburgh finds a way to win. They don't, just because they're a better team.
Do you think
Landry Jones put enough on tape to game plan for?
At least they got something now.
And you don't have to game plan for a guy running around, you know, as much.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's real impressive, but Vic was awful. So it's not like it's a big loss to have lost Vic.
Oh, no, I agree with that. I think
he could hand it to Le'Veon Bell a whole bunch of times and throw a few passes here and there, and it might be enough to beat the Chiefs. I mean, I just don't see the Chiefs' offense doing anything, even against the Pittsburgh defense, which hasn't been that good. The Chiefs' offense, I mean, Smith is terrible. He's just terrible. And
Macklin's got a concussion, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he might not play. I think he can run. I think he can run on Pittsburgh. That's my. We'll see.
And if they had Charles, that would be a lot more of a possibility.
This kid West is good. Minnesota's got a good defense. If this kid West breaks out this week, I'll collect my kudos next week. Don't worry.
Back-to-back tractor pull games here, I think. Browns head to St. Louis to play the Rams. I think it would be a competitive game.
Todd Gurley might run for 250 yards in this game.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Browns' run defense, I mean, is so bad. I mean, not quite. I mean, even Denver ran for 152 yards against them. Denver, whose run game is just god awful, and Gurley's the real deal. But I think this is a comfortable St. Louis win.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I'll just go right back with you guys on that. Yeah, Cleveland's bad. St. Louis is pretty good. They're home. St. Louis just out footballs them.
This is a big game for St. Louis.
Oh yeah,
being 2-3, and the fact that, you know, Seattle's slipping. I mean, this, they can't afford to lose this game if they want to compete in that division.
Mm. No, and if you look at the matchup, I mean, it really looks like it favors St. Louis.
Oh yeah, big time. Great run game against a porous defense. So
yeah, I mean, that kid's the real deal.
Oh yeah, he looks great, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he and they don't mind. They gave it to him 30 times the last game. I mean, that Foles will probably throw 8 passes in this game, and they'll win by 20 points.
The other tractor pull game, the Texans head down to Miami to play the Dolphins. I'm going to leave this one out here, whoever wants to cherry pick it. Go ahead, Schmitty.
The Dolphins played a good game last week. I mean, albeit, you know, it was against Tennessee, but it was a pretty resounding win in Tennessee. So the defense looked like we all thought they were going to look. A little better, you know. I think they compiled a bunch of sacks. Cameron Wake woke up. They gave the ball to Lamar Miller. He looked pretty good. I think Miami takes this game. They have to control DeAndre Hopkins. Mm. That's the only chance Houston has of winning this game is if Foster can. Foster will be Foster. He's going to get his 70 to 100 yards, but DeAndre Hopkins, they can't let him go for $150 and 2 scores. Hmm. And even if they do, they still might lose because their defense sucks.
But the I like Miami by a couple of touchdowns here. I mean, I think what you saw last week. I know it was against Tennessee, but I mean, to me, it's clear as day that they had quit on Philbin before the season started. I mean, they looked like literally like a different bunch of guys out there. And, you know, we've seen this before. And it's a shame that Philbin was around at all for that team, because they do have the personnel where they could really be good. But I think this is an easy win for them. I feel like they've turned it around. They're not a great team, but they're an above average team at this point. And Houston is god awful. Houston's really, really bad. Their cornerbacks are so burnable, and I think you'll see Landry and Matthews have good games here.
Yeah, you know, we thought Miami was a decent team coming into the season. 500 the last 2 years. We thought they might have gotten a little better with some of the offseason moves like Sue. And yeah, obviously, it wasn't working with Philbin at all. And last week, it was against a non-opponent. So I guess you got to say the jury's still out. And now they're home against Houston, who, again, is kind of a non-opponent. But if they play another good game at home, now at home against a non-opponent, well, yeah, maybe they're looking like that 500 team again, which is probably where they should be. So they should take care of this game without too much trouble.
Well, they better, because I think they have New England on the schedule next week. So they better win this one.
That'll be the end of the run.
We'll have to go to Boneheads for that one, Senior.
Yeah, that sounds good. The Miami bar.
Exactly.
We'll go rock it in our Patriot shirts.
We got 2 4 o'clock games, both in division. The Raiders head to San Diego. Rivers threw for, 500 yards last week, 503, I think, and lost. They should win. I think they win this game at home.
There should be a lot of scoring in this game. San Diego's defense isn't good either, so I see both quarterbacks putting up big numbers. But, yeah, I think Rivers outplays Derek Carr, and they win a high-scoring game.
And San Diego's pass defense has been not bad. You can run on them like crazy. But, I mean, I think they're a pretty good team. I know I said their defense was sneaky bad, and it is. But they're not a 2-4 team. I mean, they to go into Green Bay and play like that, and then the week before, the way they lost to Pittsburgh right at the end on the last play of the game, it's just, you know, the ball's just not bouncing their way. The Raiders are just not a very good team, and I think San Diego wins this game pretty easily.
Okay, and then the other 4 o'clock game, coming off their bye, the still banged up Cowboys,
Matty Castle, baby.
Makes a start. Maybe Dez, probably not. Heads to the Meadowlands to take on a Giant team that looked atrocious on Monday night and losing to the... I call that one wrong. And the doctor was right. He thought they were going to come out and play awful, and they did. And they lose to the Eagles. This might be the first Cowboy-Giant game in a while where both teams are visibly terrible. So,
that hasn't happened since like 2013. Just kidding. I'm just kidding, Scott.
They were not visibly bad, and well, the Cowboys. Oh no, they weren't visibly.
They were both bad. Eight and eight. Was that the year that, right? The Cowboys lost to the Eagles.
Yeah.
The last game of the season.
Yeah, but they still could have gone to the playoffs. I mean, 8-8's not like 4-12, which is what these two teams could conceivably end up being.
I know.
So,
it's true.
I mean, I could easily see. Maybe Matt Cassel could manage a decent enough game to win, and the Cowboys have beaten the Giants at the Meadowlands, but I don't know. I'm up in the air on this one. I could see the Giants winning by a field goal.
To me, I think the game depends on what Eli Manning shows up. If the Eli for the first 5 weeks of the season, who was pretty good, shows up, I think the Cowboys are in big trouble. If the Eli from last week's game against Philly shows up, the Cowboys should definitely win. Because Senior, did you happen to watch any of that?
Eli, it was an ugly game to watch. You know, I mean,
it was terrible.
The team that wins by 20 points, their quarterback throws three picks. I mean, when do you ever throw three picks?
Sucked.
And the Giants, that first drive, it was like a surgical procedure. They walked right downfield on them, all beautiful, ended with a touchdown pass to Beckham. Eli looked great, and that was it. That was what they had for the night. Then it was turnovers, and yeah, the old Eli back. I'm gonna make a call on this game. Okay, I think even though they're on the road, I think the Cowboys look better with Matt Cassel. I think Whedon was that bad, and Cassel. Not saying he's an all-pro, but Cassel is a serviceable quarterback. Mm-hmm. They've had 2 weeks to get ready. We're also going to give you a heavier dose of Christian Michael behind that offensive line, and I think they might have something there. I think that run Michael behind that offensive line, have Cassel manage the game, mix a few passes in here and there, put some pressure on Eli with that pass rush that the Patriots saw a couple of weeks ago. And I think it all spells a Cowboy victory in New York.
Okay.
I agree with you, Senior.
I like that philosophy, too.
You basically took the words right out of my mouth, Chris. Michael's going to get his audition, and I personally think he's going to run away with that starting job.
You keep hearing about what kind of an athlete he is. They say that he's like a freakishly athletic guy.
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's give him a chance behind that line, you know, and Cassel knows how to manage a game.
He'll at least take chances down the field.
Yeah, he's not going to look like Brandon Whedon. That's a joke.
Yeah, he's not going to throw, you know, 3-yard dunks. No, that's not going to happen.
Whedon was just check down.
He just didn't want to get hit.
Right.
I think the decent Eli shows up at home. As good, I agree that Michael will be good, and I think the Cowboys will score some points, but I don't see the Cowboys having an answer for Beckham. Really at all. And
Beckham didn't look right to me last week.
Yeah, he's got another week to get okay. Mm. And I like the Giants. I can't back Matt Cassel on the road in his first start of the season. I just can't do it. I just don't have it in me. So
if they were playing a good team, I might agree with you, but
24-21 Giants.
Well said, Schmitty.
Hmm.
The Giants have played one bad game all season. They were good in the other games. The Cowboys have looked awful. And I think they'll be better coming off the bye. But
see, maybe I'm basing this off the Patriots game. That defense showed me something in the first half. That pass rush was ferocious.
Yeah, they put that kind of pressure on Eli. He'll make some mistakes.
Yeah,
that's
what the Eagles did.
Exactly. And I think the Cowboy pass rush is much better. Gregory's back. And Hardy on the other side. I mean, that's Eli was running for his life this last game. So that's what I see happening.
Mm. This Sunday night game looks pretty sexy. As bad as the Eagles played, they did win, and they head down to Carolina to play the Panthers. Panthers playing with a boatload of confidence and still undefeated. I think you're going to see a stoked crowd in primetime. I like the Panthers.
Yep, I see the undefeated Panthers rolling too. I'm still not impressed with the Eagles. I watched that game and they didn't impress me at all. I think Bradford makes too many mistakes, and this is a good physical defense that's going to come after them. And I see Carolina being able to move the ball on them with the things that they do with Cam dumping it off and running, and Jonathan Stewart started to get it going last week. I mean, I think they're a good team. They're home. They're a good team at home, playing well, coming off a big win. The Eagles may feel like they're getting something going, but no, I don't see their offense having a good game against this defense. And I see the Panthers remaining undefeated.
Mm. Yep, I agree with the Panthers win. I don't think it'll be I think it'll be a close game. So the key for the Eagles, historically, if you're going to beat the Panthers defense, it's on the ground. Murray's gotten it going a little bit the last 2 weeks. If Kelly can bring himself to just feed him, that gives the Eagles their best chance to win. But to your point, I think Cam and Greg Olsen's playing really, really well, really well. Stewart got it going, and the Panthers defense is just a little bit better. And I think the Panthers offense matches up pretty well to the Eagles defense, where I think that style of offense will give the Eagles defense trouble. And I don't think it'll be real high scoring, like 2017 Carolina.
Yeah. And then Monday night in the toaster, I think Arizona rebounds from the loss in Pittsburgh. I think they beat the Ravens.
Yeah. Carson Palmer will be NFL Player of the Week. Any decent quarterback against that team right now can just do whatever he wants. It might be the worst pass defense I've ever seen in my life. They're awful. Mm. So that this game's going to be a joke.
It's really tough not to see it as a joke. Arizona has a good defense, and to your point, Senior, but I mean, Arizona's passing offense is, you know, sneakily maybe the second best in the NFL behind what we got going on in New England. I mean, Palmer's outplayed everybody but Brady this year. You know, he's been better than Rodgers and better than Locke. So it's really tough to see him not throwing for like 450 yards and
whatever he wants.
You know, I mean, Steve Smith he's a guy, you got to love him. You just have to love him. I mean, he's got such a...
What a warrior.
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy, if anyone plays fantasy football, where you don't want to leave him on the bench, just in general. Am I right about that, Senior?
Yeah, it can be a huge mistake. even when you think he's banged up. He's just one tough guy. You've got to admire that guy.
But with all that said, I mean, he is a... Forsett's banged up. Or is Forsett's banged up? Smith's a little banged up. Arizona's defense is tough. It's tough not seeing this one 35-13 or something like that.
And when you talk about that guy, Cowboy, remember what his name is. It's not just Smith. It's Senior.
It is Senior. And that just adds a level of toughness right there that only that name can.
Absolutely.
Before we go, I want your opinion on what happened on Saturday in East Lansing. That poor kid, punter for the Wolverines, muffs the snap, and Michigan State runs back the fumble on the last play of the game to beat the Wolverines. Apparently, this punter's getting death threats, and I don't know. That's crazy. It's not like, you know, it's not like what happened Sunday night with the Colts, because that was a pre-designed pile of crap play. This was just, you know, a punt that failed, or a play that was poorly executed, not a play that was designed to suck and then sucked. One of the most epic endings I've ever seen in a football game in my time of watching college football. Just crazy. Ohio State's still the top of the... top of the polls. They're having some QB issues. They play Rutgers this week. They'll be not far from me, about an hour and a half, a couple hours away in Piscataway to take on Rutgers. Clemson's got big game coming up this week. Baylor continues to stay undefeated, so we'll start seeing the playoff polls coming out very soon. So, guys, great show, as always. We'll be back next week. We'll have a World Series, definitely. We don't know who's in it, but we will have a World Series. When we meet next week, we will talk week 8 in the NFL. And wow, looking ahead to next week's schedule. We'll talk about what happens in Foxborough with the with the Jets and the Patriots. And then other games to talk about next week. Waiting for the page to load. You can tell I'm trying to stall. The Week 8 schedule. Well, you guys actually play Thursday night as you host Miami, as you mentioned. Giants go to New Orleans. Let's see. Any other big games next week? Well, Cincinnati goes to Pittsburgh next week. That could be a big game. And Green Bay, Denver on Battle of Undefeateds next week. Two teams coming off a bye, Packers and Broncos next Sunday night. We'll talk about that. And then Monday night, we talked about the Panthers. Boy, senior, you're going to buy your Cam Newton jersey next Monday night as the Colts go into Carolina?
That'll be a beating.
There will be. I think it will be, too. We'll talk about it next week.
I've got a Cam Newton jersey you can wear, senior. Legitimately, I do.
For senior, junior, Schmitty, I'm Scott. Sports does come and go, but with your us, oh, man, I blew that. When you're with us, I thought I'd get this tag down. When you're with us, it will not pass you by. Maybe I'm getting skittish because we're three innings away from winning the pennant.
Cowboy out.
Have a good week.